Hello and welcome to the very last episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes.
Oh my God.
The voice you heard there was Professor Stephen Fielding. Hello, Steve.
Hello, I'm shocked. You've just dropped this. What?
And my name is Emma Burnell, and I'm afraid that, as all good things have to, we are coming to an end. I have a new job, which means that I have to give all my cultural inspirations to that because it's a new full-time job.
What is your job, Emma? What is your job?
I'm off to be editor of Labour List, which I'm very excited about.
You should be. That's a prime gig, really, isn't it? If you've got certain skills and interests, the Labour Party, the left, journalists, you know.
These are hopefully my skills and interests
Yes.
and why I have been appointed.
And I'm not congratulating you in these effusive terms because I hope to be commissioned to be writing for you. I'm not doing that at all. Not at all.
You'd be amazed how popular I suddenly am with lobbyists and journalism students.
Yes.
So yes, we thought we, instead of taking one piece or like last episode that came out a few days ago, two pieces accidentally of content, we thought this time we'd look back rather self-indulgently, you'll forgive us listeners, to our favorite episodes, and sort of thinking, and I think we've probably chosen not just our favorite episodes as such, but favorite things that we've covered. I don't think either of us have gone into the episodes where we really hated something, which regular listeners to the Zeitgeist Tapes will know has happened more than once. So, Steve, before we do all of that, do you want to tell the listeners how all of this came about in the first place?
Well, you asked me. You got in touch after what I can only describe as one of the most incredibly badly conceived hours on Radio 4. I think Radio 4 were trying to go for edgy, and instead they just fell over the edge with this particular idea. It was a program that I think it was a series of programs over a desperate summer that I think some commissioning editor hoped they'd all become very trendy and it'd be like The Word, but for slightly clever people.
Yeah, I think it was like The Word meets that late night show where they kept having Oliver, what's his face, on drunk.
Oh, Oliver Reed. Yeah, we all see Oliver Reed storming off in a drunken stupor.
Or
Yes.
trying to snog radical feminists who really don't want to be touched by him.
Yeah. I forget what the name of the actual strand or the program was, but it brought together, let's say, an eclectic group of people under the what it turned out to be not the supervision, not the capable supervision of a chair who, I guess can we name
I think we
him?
can name him. Yeah, he was a public figure. He's not a public figure anymore. Or at least not in any positive light, but it was hosted by Hardeep Singh Kohli, who has since got on some infamy, shall we say.
Yes, yeah. I think hosted rather than chaired. And it was a difficult, it turned out to be a difficult bunch of people. I forget what we were meant to be talking about because we didn't really talk about very much because it was dominated by two particular people who were going off the deep end, two women, young women. One was very right wing, one was very left wing at that point, and they were just basically trading blows, but also bigging each other up at the same time.
Yeah, they were sort of bickering, but at the same time, like sniggering. They gave us a lot of wine and a bit of cheese. I remember that.
I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, no, in fact, I think it was port. I think it was like so pretentious. It was port and cheese, and they gave us quite a lot of it, and they got increasingly drunk. One of them kept vaping, and that was quite new at the time. And it was like, oh, I'm so like, oh, look at me vaping inside. And it just reminded me of that time that someone lit a cigarette on Never Mind the Buzzcocks, and Simon Amstell was like, "He's smoking a cigarette, something that's legal."
Yes, yes.
But yeah, it was Laurie Penny from the
Oh,
Left
gotcha.
and
Yeah.
Alexandra Swan, I think I want to say, from
I
Europe,
really can't
or
remember her
whatever
name
they were
at
called then.
all. I've no idea what became of her.
Slightly egged on by whatever I mean, I remember he had one of those completely bizarre posh names, and the guy who interrupted the boat race,
Oh, the swimmer
the
that interrupted the
swimmer,
boat
yeah.
race. Yeah, we all
And
know
then
who
it
he
was
was.
you and I
Yes, the voice
and
of reason.
Jonathan Isabey, who like would ne I would never normally group myself in with, but you, the three of us, were kind of the grown-ups in the room. And
Oh,
then this
really?
poor, bewildered woman from a black mental health charity who was sitting there the whole time. She barely said anything. And it was quite clear that her entire being was cringing and thinking, "What the hell am I doing here?" Like, at
Well, I
least
thought that
you,
myself.
myself, and Jonathan were people who regularly did media appearances. This woman, like, I don't think she did. So we at least were kind of vaguely like, we're on a producer's call list.
Yeah.
But the whole thing was just baffling.
It was like living through World War II, the Blitz, World War II. You know, it was just like, what did we just go through? Let's try and just take what we can from this. And that was the one thing that came from that disaster.
Yeah,
You
from
said,
that disaster, from the
yeah.
ashes of that disaster rose
Yeah.
the phoenix that has been the Zeitgeist Tapes. Because
Yes.
afterwards, you and I got chatting, and you told me about your book, which we will link to in the show notes.
Oh God, yeah, I forgot about the book. Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and I was just starting to embark on doing, at that point, just theatre criticism, not even writing my own shows.
Done. Quite a
But and was quite interested in sort of how politics and popular culture collide and how one covers the other. And so it sort of sparked something in my head, and I said, "Hey, baby, let's do a podcast." And you very kindly said, "Don't call me baby, but yeah, right
Yeah, that'll look good on my CV
then."
when I get, because Nottingham University look like I'm engaging, you know, in that way you're all meant to do is university, you know, lecturers and whatever. So yeah, well, we had a very awkward format, I think, initially. We went on very long, we went far too long, and we talked
Well,
about
I mean,
things.
the naming convention also
And the
was not
naming
great.
conventions had to be dispensed with at some
Yeah.
point because we're running out of variations of pod.
Yeah.
And eventually, I think we reached a format that that seemed to work for us. I don't know about you, listener. I don't know if it worked for you, but it worked for us. And frankly, I don't care whether it worked for you, because I enjoyed doing them. I enjoyed doing them. I mean, I guess we wouldn't have done them for as long as we did had we found them at all cumbersome, really. I mean, I've been found them very enjoyable, I have to say. And I'm close to tears at the very prospect of never having to do this again.
It's no, it's been so much fun, and also, it's and don't get take this the wrong way, it's quite
Oh.
nice having you set my homework for me. Like, obviously we sort of, I think we took turns most for the most part in saying, this is what we'll do this month, and
Yes.
we would tend to host the one where it had been our suggestion. But you've got me to watch things, listen to things, read things that I wouldn't have done otherwise, and that's been, really interesting. And sometimes I've resented you for it when I haven't enjoyed them. But on the other hand, like, some things that I've been introduced to that I just, I was really, really pleased that, and I never would have, like, Cat In, I never would have watched Cat In without you. So that's been a real joy. Thank you.
Well, and as we will discover later on, there's at least one, but there is more than one, really, of things, something I would never have considered watching. And I'm really glad that I did.
Great.
So, yes,
So
it's
on
been.
that note, what we're gonna
Yes.
do, if listeners will indulge us, and if they won't, because it's our last episode, so
Yeah,
sodja.
who cares?
We are going to go through five each in very short order. We don't
Yes.
worry, listeners, we won't rehash the whole episodes of our favourite episodes and what we got from them.
Yeah.
So if I can ask you to do your first one.
Yeah. And this is in no particular order. We're just sort of doing the top five that we thought. And the first for me is the campaign, because I'm meant to be a Labour historian. And during my sort of research, and I'm meant to write this book, this is still a book about Labour, which I'm taking a heck of a long time to do. And I was sort of looking into the early 1980s, and I discovered that the BBC had done a dramatization of the left-wing takeover, or a series of votes in the early 1980s, which took the Labour Party in a, until Jeremy Corbyn, a uniquely left direction. And it kind of was parallel with what was going on in the Labour Party at the time, Jeremy Corbyn. And it was just so bizarre, the whole notion that the BBC Two would commission a dramatization of how the left took over, at least for a little bit, of the Labour Party. And it's first of all to discover it, and then to find out it's on YouTube, and then to get John Landsman, who is actually in it, to come onto the programme to talk about it. I just thought, you know, these worlds are colliding, and not in a bad way. You know, this is all to the good. I wouldn't necessarily recommend the campaign as such, as a piece of, you know, drama, but it was just fascinating that this thing existed and we could get John Landsman to talk about it. And, you know, it must have been the only instance where we got someone who was dramatized in something to talk about it.
No, we've had some great guests over the years. We've talked to Helen Lewis, John Elledge, but yeah, I think John Landsman is our only subject interviewee,
Yes.
which was fantastic. And yeah, a lot of the times, obviously, when we pick something, it's triggered by what is currently happening.
Yes.
Or has recently happened. So I think it was yeah, these pieces of art that we try to pick out, or popular culture, do in some way or another reflect the discussions that we're having at the time. And I think that the campaign was, yeah, I mean, was it great? A great piece of television, no, but it was quite an illuminating piece of television in that it got made and that in what it said, and getting John to come on and talk about it was so interesting. So yeah, I think that's a really good first choice from you.
Yes, so over to you.
So my first one is Parks and Rec, just because I've just done another rewatch of it, and I will, yeah. Do this again, I am sure. And I was, you know, trying to, yeah, decide between doing Parks and Rec or West Wing, both of which I've rewatched recently and really loved. But ultimately, I just think in this time of cynicism about politics, and everything feeling very dark and gloomy, Leslie Knope is the answer. And Parks and Rec, even though, you know, it's not glowingly Pollyanna-ish about local government, it does paint a picture of people trying to make people's lives just a little bit better. And I think that's such a vital anecdote and rejoinder to all of the ways that everybody talks about politics these days. So I think you could go. You can't go far wrong than A, watching Parks and Rec, and then B, listening to the two of us extol its virtues.
Yeah, I mean, I was glad of the opportunity to talk about it, because I was teaching at the time. I was teaching at the time in Nottingham, a course that was looking at how American and British sort of fiction depicted politics. And this was clearly a positive take on politics, as well as very, very funny. And you know, some students sort of did little special projects on it to look at certain characters. But and also, I mean, he's from a different era now. I mean, it's just like, geez, you know, that it was optimist. It was obviously trying to deal with the cynicism about politics and the divisions in politics, and trying to show that different sides can come together and understand each other and be part of a common endeavor to make people's lives better through politics. And Leslie Knope is such a great character. So I just enjoyed being able to talk about it, really.
I mean, I think interestingly, having watched both of them recently, I think the politics of Parks and Rec stands up better than the politics of The West Wing, which just feels so naive. And maybe it's because I'm also a local government fan, but also because what they do in Parks and Rec is so close to the ground that you can actually see change. They do build a park. But it is a genuinely heartwarming take on politics, and I think those are few and far between. So, what's your next choice?
My Fair Lady, the
Yeah,
musical, My Fair Lady.
we did
And
not
to
agree
be
on that one.
yeah to be yeah I wanted to do it because I was going to watch a touring version of it in Manchester. With Anna, who sort of got a kind of vaguely parental, caring, relationship with in, of long standing, and we both have sort of like musical theatre, really. So it was to watch that, and I became kind of interested in it because it's an adaptation of Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw. So I watched the Leslie Howard film version. Which is closely to the play. And then I also watched My Fair Lady, the musical, the film version with Audrey Hepburn, and then watched the stage version of it. And so that it was very, very solipsistic, really. I'm going to watch My Fair Lady. We're going to go to My Fair Lady. Why don't we just talk about it? I didn't realise the sexual politics were so awful. I did not know that at the time. And I just find it absolutely amazing. And I think we talked about that. I find it absolutely amazing that at the heart of this really deeply misogynistic, weird, very weird, so in terms of sexual politics and its attitude towards women and their relationship with men, I find it so odd that it's a really happy, it's a happy musical that people go to and they love it. I mean, I love it too, but at the heart of it, and I remember sort of explaining to Anna about it, she sort of looked at me and said, "This is odd," but we still loved it, we still liked it. So, and I just like the being able to bring that, at least that kind of spin, that understanding of what this, how weird it is, of a very popular sort of musical.
Yeah, I couldn't get on board. The songs are good, but I just my face through most of it was like that gif that everyone shares of the audience at the producers, like, oh. I love a good musical. I love a good musical of that era. I understand that era's sexual politics are different than my own. Give me Mary Poppins any day, frankly.
Well, it's not a
Not
competition.
least it's got a bleeding story.
Yeah, it's got Dick Van Dyke's. I mean, anyway. But I think you can
Dick
enjoy
Van
something.
Dyke is rightly maligned for that accent, although in every other way, Dick Van Dyke,
He's a
fantastic
lovely
socialist
person.
that he is a
Yes.
wonderful person. But I mean, it's not like Eliza Doolittle's accent was right in either voice that she was trying to do.
I'm a good girl, I am.
The rain in Spain falls
Yes,
mainly.
yes.
I'm not being funny, but I'm from the East End. That ain't how we talk.
No. But I mean, George Bernard Shaw was a weirdo, and it's kind of like, despite all the Hollywoodization of it, the weirdness comes out. It's still there. They didn't get rid of the weirdness. It's
No.
still very, very odd. But anyway, I just thought, talk about a musical. Everyone likes it, and yet at the heart of it, there's a darkness. There's a darkness in its politics. That's it.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that. So my next choice, at the very different end of the scale, is our episode on Vote for Froglet, which I think might even have been an election special, but then there were so many
Yes.
elections during the 8 years that we've been doing this, and practically every other episode was an election
That's true,
special.
yes.
And on Vote for Froglet, we had a very special guest, Tim Worthington, or as he's also known, TV's clangers expert, and my ex-boyfriend. And what I loved about that episode and what I loved about doing the Zeitgeist tapes with you is that we took a very short, rather silly, very fun bit of children's animation and deepened it into a really quite in-depth conversation about the politics of the 1970s.
Yes.
And that I think in many ways was the Zeitgeist tapes at its best, doing exactly what we have tried to do with the show, which is show how, the cultural iconography of the time reflected and illuminates the politics of the time,
Yes.
even if it's things going at each other.
And I enjoyed doing it because it allowed me to talk about my book because I talked about it in my book. And also it's a bit like My Fair Lady that everything's oh Oliver Postgate, oh lovely, cuddly, blah 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 kind of guy. I'm sure he was. But he did vote for Froglet in a moment of disenchantment. And all because he used to be Labour, very strongly Labour family, and it's actually I mean Vote for Froglet, ironically, wouldn't stand out if it was put as promoting reform now, because it's an anti-politics little show, bizarrely. So yeah, it's the paradoxes about a kid's show. Although it was a special thing that they showed it on the night of the 9th October 1974 election, but nonetheless, the dark despair of Oliver Postgate, kind of anticipating the deeper and darker despair of many people today. It wouldn't really be out of place, really, no.
No, absolutely. So, what's your next choice?
Ooh. Okay, my next choice is well, I thought we did a podcast on A Christmas Carol, right? I was convinced that we had because I remember reading it for the very purposes of talking about it, and I couldn't find a list, and then yes, you confirm. We talked about Scrooge, the Bill Murray film, which is a version of A Christmas Carol, and I would never and so we kind of did that. But for some reason, I decided I would also read A Christmas Carol anyway, and I would strongly. I mean, I was quite surprised by how good A Christmas Carol was, and the message, fairly strong if slightly flawed. Message that Dickens had about Christmas, because it was not just about Christmas, it's about how we should treat each other.
Dickens is for life, not just for Christmas.
Yes, and it also, well, obviously we watched talked about Scrooge, and I don't think I would have watched it under any other circumstances, and I thought though, well, this is good as well. It's not as good as A Christmas Carol. I mean, I know what it's doing, and Bill Murray, he's all right. I'm not a great fan, but I'm not an enemy. I'm not an enemy. I thought it was an interesting take on that, and but I think it was more that I read A Christmas Carol. That was why I enjoyed doing the podcast, so I could talk about it and try and tell people they should, not don't watch Scrooge, but A Christmas Carol as a source material. I think it's far too, and I've never seen. A Muppet's Christmas, or whatever that's called, which
Oh, Muppet's Christmas Carol's really good.
everybody said it's really good, but I'm
Yeah.
not watching. Had we
I mean,
continued with this, maybe I would have been forced to.
one doesn't like to you overuse the metaphor, but perhaps that makes you a bit of a Scrooge.
No, I don't understand what you're saying. So I would strongly recommend Christmas, on the basis, I'm glad it made me read A Christmas Carol. And I'm not antipathetic for having watched Scrooge, but it was actually being able to talk about it and to try and tell people, read A Christmas Carol, don't go with the interpretations, although some of them are better than others, but the actual source material is so, I think, so much better.
I mean, I've recently come around to Dickens. I was really anti-Dickens, and I think I even was about a year or so ago when we
Yes.
did the Pickwick Papers, which I'm still not going to read because that was the book that put me off Dickens. I read about half of
Right.
it at university, and I just never picked up a Dickens again. But I have recently listened to the audiobooks of Tale of Two Cities, Bleak House,
Far,
and
far
Great
better. Yeah.
Expectations. And they're
Yes.
brilliant. And I feel
Yeah.
like I owe my dad a massive apology because I've spent 20 years telling him that Dickens is shit. And I have actually given my dad that apology. And I'm really glad that I finally came to see the light. But I'm still never ever reading the whole of Pickwick Papers.
No, and I mean, given I actually did suggest we do the Pickwick Papers, but that chapter, just
Just
one
the
chapter.
chapter, yeah.
Just that one chapter, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, hard times. I'm not gonna. Yeah, there is some Dickens. It's just he goes on at
Yeah.
length. That's the problem at times, and it's just irritating. But sometimes they're going on at length, like I think it's a Sunday morning in London. He describes it, and it's
It is
just
stunning, yeah.
ridiculously good. But
Yeah.
anyway, yes, yeah.
So yeah, I am glad that I have Dickens in my life, and that is at least in part thanks to you sort of slightly pushing me towards it. So thank you for that. So my next one is, she says, desperately looking for her notes. Ah, yes. Our Friends in the North. Which was a very interesting watch because I watched it for the second time in my life 20 years after watching it the first time. And I think that episode for me was really interesting because my reaction as a 40-something-year-old was so different than my reaction when I was in my 20s. And I found unpacking that really interesting. Yeah, I originally I'm and you know, I came into it the second viewing thinking that Nicky, the Christopher Eccleston character, was, you know, a huge hero. And I was like, oh, he's a total dick.
Yes. Yeah.
And as you are my friend of the North, did you have the same response, or did you always
Sorry.
think,
Sorry.
who are these
I'm from
idiots?
Manchester, and that's Newcastle, and that's like confusing, I don't know,
I
Peckham
mean,
with
are you
Bathbury.
claiming you're not in the North? Because I've never heard that
No,
from
I'm
a
just saying
Mancunian
the North is
before.
a very the North is a diverse place. It's not just anyway, I'll leave it like that. I'll leave it like that. Well, I like this because well, I watched it when it came out at the time, right? And I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was great. I think it was the same sort of journey as you. And then I was writing a book about how British fiction, drama, whatever, depicted politics. So I had to watch it again, not long before, I mean, a year or two before we did the actual podcast. And I thought it was terrible. I thought it was Trotskyite trash, really. And so again, it gave me the opportunity to talk about the book. So that was good. But also because everybody goes, I'm like, oh, our friends are not so good. It's a great, oh, wonderful. And my, because I like to be, the person that spoils everybody's party and say, be able to say, you know what, it's not. And that was good. I like being able to do that. I mean, it's got good bits in it, and the character, the only female lead character, that's interesting. She's the real
Yeah,
hero of all of that,
absolutely,
I think.
100%.
Yeah, although I'm not sure that Flannery presents her in those terms.
Oh
So
no,
yeah.
she's the sellout, and it's interesting that the female character is the one they think sells out as well.
Yeah. So yeah, I was glad to get it off my chest. So thank you for that.
Great. And what's your next choice?
Well, it's a relatively recent one, but it's we actually talked about two films, two Frank Capra films, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and Meet John Doe, because with the whole Trump thing and the whole idea, and also the Farage thing, the whole sort of populism and anti-politics and media and all of that. And because I'd taught this course, if only for those reads at Nottingham, I would start off the course with Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and get certain scenes and get the students to look and to sort of, show a scene, Let's talk about that. What's going on here? And so get them to learn or to try and understand or to sort of develop skills to sort of see about politics in a sort of a mainstream film, albeit one from 1939. Meet John Doe was made in 1940, but just this next one Capra did. But these did, but they both dealt with themes about the role of the media, populism, anti-politics, what politics can do, what it can't do, and all of that, which just so contemporary, and yet nobody was talking about it, sort of making references to, at least that I could work out. So I really like these films for all kinds of reasons. I think Capra is a really interesting, if flawed sort of director, with certain peculiar attitudes towards politics, but also sort of very, honourable attitudes towards what politics can do, what people can do in politics. And I just like the opportunity to be able to talk about two of my most favourite films at a time where I thought they were really, interestingly relevant again.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So my next choice is also quite a recent one. Not the piece of work, but the episode which was Running on Empty. And I mainly wanted to bring this up because I think you describe it so brilliantly in the episode as a Hallmark movie for terrorists. And I just thought that was the perfect description of the film, even though it's a film I adore and will champion for all my life. It is a Hallmark movie for terrorists. So yeah, but you hadn't seen it before, had you?
No, and I'm glad you made me, maybe watch it by recommending it, because I don't think I ever would have done. And I enjoyed the film, but it is basically what I said. It's sort of sugarcoating terrorism, really. These lovable terrorists, and they are lovable, and they've got, and I get all that. But it's a great film. But and I'm just surprised what they got away with, because. But anyway, they were nice people. So if you're a nice person, and it's something that's in the past, and it's all been kind of like sorted out, that's all right. You can be a terrorist. It's like there's a film, the film Suffragette, that was, came out, relatively more recently, and that's the same thing. They're terrorists. They're blowing things up, but it's all right. It's okay. They're the good terrorists.
The right side of history and all that.
Yes, the right side of history. Yeah.
So when we came to put these lists together, there was one episode that was always going to be on both of our lists.
Yeah.
So Steve, do you want to do the honours?
Well, we both put Dirty Dancing down as in our top five, and I wasn't surprised by that, because we've talked about it before. And of all the things that I've watched or read or whatever that you have suggested, and I've done so with some reluctance, this is one I did with the greatest of reluctance, with the heaviest of hearts, with the darkest of kind of moods as it started to start, as a film started. I thought, whatever. And I thought it was so good. And it was such a clever, you should be saying all this, such a
No,
clever
it's more interesting to
example.
hear you because I came into it feeling all of this, but you,
Yes.
as you say, were very, very reluctant. So it's interesting to
Well,
hear
because you've got
your thought
Patrick
process.
Swayze, it's a chick flick, there's a lot of dancing, I remember the song. Oh, blah, blah. And yeah, it's such a clever way of talking about class. And I'll
Well,
just leave it at that.
as I've often said, it is the most political film of the 1980s. It's an incredibly clever political film. Masquerading as a chick flick,
Yes,
and
very
by
successfully, I
far
might
very successful. Well,
say.
exactly. But I've gone to Sing Along a Dirty Dancing, I've gone to the immersive cinema Dirty Dancing. It's full of people going there like for a kind of hen night style night out to then sit down and watch a film about class and abortion and women's rights and the meaning of liberalism when you're upper middle class. And you frankly, I think that's going to have a far more pervasive effect than any bloody Ken Loach film, because nobody goes into a Ken Loach film to be persuaded. They know what they
Have a
think when
good
they go
time.
in,
No.
or to have a good time. Whereas
Don't be
dirty
camera
dancing
phil.
is sneaky. It's sneaky and it gets you and it makes you
I mean,
think.
yes. No, I mean, but it rate that does, because as you were talking, I thought about the point I wanted to make anyway, but it raises a general point about, can these things with their subtext, is a subtext so deeply down there, or even if it pops up, that it's the context that people aren't really looking at it. Does it have a subliminal effect on an audience, or is it there really to sort of please the people writing it and producing it? I mean, those are questions that can't be answered. Those are all like questions. But you're absolutely right with the contrast with the Ken Loach films, that nobody goes in there. There are very few Tories that ever watched a Ken Loach film, and certainly very few that come out and go, you know what, I'm a Trotskyist now. It's only the committed that already go and see a Ken Loach film, and they come out with their commitments reinforced, because for the most part, it's like watching propaganda while the paint's drying. Sometimes, earlier days he was quite good. I don't want to be too down on poor old Ken. But yeah, you're
He
absolutely
has
right.
been rather boy of this podcast through the years.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, he once accused me of being a neoliberal wanker. Very much Ken. So yeah, I don't really hold a candle for him very much. But yeah, there's interesting questions about all of these things we've kind of looked at. What effect does it have on an audience? There are all kinds of studies that show that some these things can have, but they're usually a bit more. They don't necessarily have subtext. They have, it's more like serious. This is what it's about. Maybe sometimes does have an effect, but nonetheless, if somebody comes out having watched Dirty Dancing with a sort of an acquaintance or something with questions, like, oh, that was an interesting. Oh, that says something about my life. I wonder if, oh. Then. Who am I to sort of poo-poo it? Even though I like to poo-poo things, I wouldn't poo-poo something like that. There's enough poo-pooing going on in the world.
There you go. So that's our favorite episodes.
Yeah.
I'm going to end on a question that I didn't warn you I was going to ask. Obviously, this is sadly our last episode. So, what are you sad that we never did? What do you wish we'd covered that didn't and didn't?
That's such an annoying thing to do.
No.
I hate it when people do that, because I need to be prepared. I come at this as a university
Such a
lecturer.
university
I need
lecturer.
to do my research. I have to think, what is my research? Well, okay. What I mean, when I was looking for A Christmas Carol, right? And I thought, what am I going mad? Am I? Alzheimer's hitting me already, and. I thought that would be that would be the one that I would insist on saying, this is the one I wish we had done. So a full thing on maybe A Christmas Carol, and maybe throw in a few more Dickens. Hard Times for sure. And is it Little Dorrit where the Circumlocution Office is?
I haven't read Little Dorrit yet or listened
Yeah,
to.
well, it's awful. But there's this really good bit about bureaucracy, and he's satirizing how people can get lost in bureaucracy in a way
Ah.
that Kafka hadn't even been born by that point. At that point, so I think maybe more traditional sort of Dickens, really. Just go on hard on Dickens and politics, I think, but mostly Christmas Carol.
Brilliant. Okay. And I think for me,
You've had time to prepare for that.
I
That's not
have.
fair.
I know it's so not fair. Citizen Kane.
Oh, fuck yes.
Yeah, we could definitely have got a lot out of Citizen Kane, I think, particularly if
Yes.
given current circumstances.
Yes. I
So
could
I
do
think
it now if you want. I could just do that now. I've seen it so many times.
did watch it not that recently. Not that unrecently. A few months ago, I thought, I've never seen Citizen Kane. It's ridiculous. I think I
What?
had seen it, but I'd seen it when I was in like Single Figures, and it was
Right.
like
Oh.
it's like when you grow up in London, and people say, "Have you ever been to the Tower of London?" And you're like,
Yes.
"Yeah,"
Yes, I have.
and then you realise, "Yeah, when I was eight," and that was Citizen Kane for me. I'd seen it when I was, a child. So I could
Oh
always
no.
say that I'd seen it, but I couldn't remember a damn
Yes.
thing about it except sled. So I was very, very glad to rewatch it and find that it was just as good as I thought it was.
Oh yeah, I see it so many. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen it, but it's one of those films that I can see again and again because it's so long. But there's things in it that you forget about. But no, that's yeah. And when the best bit, at least in, like, I always remember when the camera's going down into this bar that it's so good. Anyway, that's yes.
Well,
Citizen Kane's good. That's a shock.
yes,
Yeah.
shocker. What a shocking note to end this
Yes.
podcast on. Steve, thank you so much for 8 years of genuinely fabulous fun podcasting. It really has been so great doing this with you, and I've appreciated every moment of it, even when you make me read terrible books that I don't enjoy very much.
Well, I can only apologize for the terrible books. I can only think of one at the moment. So I do feel very guilty about some things. But yes, and thank you very much for making me watch things I never in my worst nightmares would have wanted to watch. And it's been just very enjoyable. And I don't know if there's anyone still listening out there, and you just don't care, do you? I've enjoyed doing this. And we've only ever done this in person, because this has all been done. You're in London, I'm in Manchester. We've only ever done it face to face once, which this
When we
is
went
better.
to a play.
Okay. Went to a play, yes.
There we go. Brilliant. Well, again, thank you so much, Steve. Thank you to Lord Stuart Wood of Anfield, who kindly answered a Facebook message I put out one day saying I'm looking for someone to do a theme tune for my podcast, and instead of just saying me, sent me a lovely bit of noodly guitar music, which we've been
Yes.
using ever since. So there you go.
Thank you.
And most of all, thank you to anyone who has stuck with us over the years, anyone who's been listening. We really have enjoyed, your feedback and your ideas and your contributions. So thank you. And maybe we'll come back in a few years' time, when there is new popular culture to be unearthed. But for
It'd be like,
now,
yes, it'd be like Friends, though. We should leave it where it
yeah,
is. We've got to be older.
leave on a high.
Yeah, leave on a high. Yeah, leave on a low. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, well, one last time. Thank you, Steve, and take care.